Chapter 55. Local farmers may have welcomed the rain that poured onto the Hudson River Valley, but it only further depressed the crew of the DeSoto. Their search for the Manhattan Limited had turned up nothing but the twisted, rusting remains of the Hudson-Deauville Bridge, which lay on the river bottom like the scattered bones of an extinct dinosaur. Hour followed hour, the crew keyed to the instruments, the helmsman steering over the same grids 5 and 6 times, everyone trying to spot something they might have overlooked. 3 times the probes that trailed behind the boat's stern hung up on underwater obstructions, creating delays of several hours before divers could work them free again. The line of Giordino's mouth tightened as he pored over the grid charts, sketching in the debris shown by the side-scan sonar. Finally, he turned to Glenn Chase. "Well, we may not know where it is, but we sure as hell know where it ain't. I'm hoping the diving team will get lucky." He looked up at the large brass chronograph on the wheelhouse wall. "They should be surfacing about now." Chase idly thumbed through the historical report on the Manhattan Limited wreck that Heidi Milligan had compiled and sent from Canada. He stopped at the last 2 pages and read them in silence. "Is it possible the train was salvaged years later when it was old news and no one bothered notifying the newspapers?" "I don't think so," replied Giordino. "The disaster was too big an event in these parts for a successful recovery to go unnoticed and unrecorded." "Any truth to the claims by individual divers that they discovered the locomotive?" "None that can be verified. One guy even swears he sat in the cab and rang the engine's bell. Another says he swam through a Pullman car filled with skeletons. Show me an unsolved mystery, and I'll show you a certified weirdo with all the answers." A figure in a dripping exposure suit materialized in the doorway and stepped into the wheelhouse. Nicholas Riley, chief diver for the project, sank to the deck, his back pressed against a bulkhead, and exhaled a great sigh. "That 3-knot current is murder," he said tiredly. "Did you find anything?" Giordino asked impatiently. "A veritable junkyard," Riley answered. "Sections of the bridge are strewn all over the riverbed. Some of the girders look shredded as if they were blown apart." "That's explained in here," said Chase, holding aloft the report. "The Army Corps of Engineers blasted off the top of the wreckage in 1917 because it was a menace to navigation." "Any sign of the train?" Giordino persisted. "Not even a wheel." Riley paused to blow his nose. "Bottom geology is fine sand, very soft. You could sink a thin dime in it." "How deep is bedrock?"
"According to our laser probe," replied Chase, "bedrock lies at 37 feet. "You could blanket a train and still have 20 feet to spare," said Riley.
Giordino's eyes narrowed. "If geniuses were awarded roses and idiots skunks, I'd get about 10 skunks.
"Well, maybe 7 skunks, Chase needled him. "Why the self-flagellation?"
"I was too dumb to see the solution to the enigma. Why the proton magnetometer can't get a solid reading? Why the sub-bottom profiler can't distinguish an entire train under the sediment?"
"Care to share your revelation?" queried Riley.
"Everyone takes for granted that the weakened bridge collapsed under the weight of the train and they dropped together. The locomotive and coaches entangled with steel girders into the water below," Giordino said briskly. "But what if the train fell through the center span first, and then the entire bridge dropped down on top and blanketed it?"
Riley stared at Chase. "I think he's got something. The weight of all that steel could well have pressed all trace of the train deep into the soft sand. His theory also explains why our detection gear has struck out," Chase agreed. "The broken mass of the bridge structure effectively distorts and shields our probe signals from any objects beneath."
Giordino faced Riley. "Any chance of tunneling under the wreckage?"
"No way," grunted Riley. "The bottom is like quicksand. Besides, the current is too strong for my divers to accomplish much.
We'll need a barge with a crane and dredge to yank that bridge off the bottom if we expect to lay our hands on the train," said Giordino. Riley rose wearily to his feet.
"Okay, I'll get my boys to shoot some underwater survey photos so we'll know where to lay the jaws of the crane."
Giordino took off his cap and wiped a sleeve over his forehead. "Funny how things work out. Here I thought we'd have the easy time of it, while Pitt and his crew got the short end of the stick.
God knows what they're up against in the St. Lawrence, said Chase. I wouldn't trade places with them. Oh, I don't know, Giardino shrugged. If Pitt is running true to form, he's probably sitting in a deck chair with a beautiful woman on one side and a Mai Tai on the other, lapping up the Canadian sun.